Welcome to Dents in the Darkness, the monthly podcast of the Northeast Collaborative. We empower pastors to lead and launch healthy churches in Northeast America. I'm your host, Tim Madeira from WRGN, and I'm here with NEC's president, Dan Nichols. Looking forward to today's podcast as we welcome pastor and church planter Mike Schooley. Dan, why did you want to have Mike come on the podcast with us today?
Well, first of all, I want to have Mike on the podcast because Mike is the man. He has pastored for decades and most recently pastored a church that he planted, Higher Hope Church, in the Horseheads, New York region for the last 17 years, which is incredible. Mike's a very fruitful and faithful leader here in the Northeast, and he's got a huge passion, like BHAG passion for reaching this region. He loves the Lord. He loves his family. And he's been taking on more leadership for Northeast Collaborative this fall as our new church strategist. So we're really, really pumped about that.
I'm excited to have Mike on the podcast as well. I got to meet him for the first time recently and looking forward to hearing, Mike, about how you came to Christ, about your ministry journey, and most importantly, about your family, because I got to meet your wife at the same time. So tell us.
Yeah, well, first, thanks for having me on and joining your podcast. There are a few marking points in my life. I think my journey with Jesus has been less of a moment and more of a process. I remember laying in bed. I grew up in a church. My parents took me to church four times a week, it seemed like. And I remember laying in bed one night being scared of hell and just not wanting to be in hell. And so I remember that night, I'm like, Jesus, I don't want to go to hell. Please save me. And I kind of remember going through a season where I felt like if I prayed that prayer again, I'd lose my salvation. And if I prayed it again, I'd gain my salvation. So I went back and forth on this whole, like, fearful, how many times have I prayed this prayer? But it was actually in about eighth grade, I went to a church camp for a week, and I just remember hearing the speakers and like wanting something more. I didn't know what the more was, but I wanted more than just the church attendance and religion and just getting into this whole like relational side of things. You know, I didn't know exactly what that was, but so I kind of like committed my life to Christ at that moment and started a journey of just doing a lot with Family Life Ministries, which is a local ministry in our area. They have a radio station now, but they were huge into youth. And so I joined a ministry team and we did mission trips to New York City, gained a lot of friends who just were followers of Christ. And that really formed me in my high school years. Then when I got to like my senior year, I was like, I had no idea what I wanted to do. Bible college is never a loss. And so I ended up going to Philadelphia Bible College, which then turned to Philadelphia Biblical University. And now it's Karen University, and just started doing the youth ministry, just really getting into God's word. But I did not want to do ministry. Heading into my senior year, I decided to go serve at a camp. I was a camp counselor. And the youth pastor at the camp pulled me aside, I think it was Thursday or Friday, and he said, I've been praying all week about who to talk to and who needs me to talk to them, and your name kept coming up. Mm-hmm. And then he kind of walked through with like ministry with me, like, I know that you don't want to do ministry. I know you don't feel adequate. You don't feel like you're a great speaker, but I want you to hear these verses. And he shared with me 2 Corinthians 12. My grace is sufficient for you, for my power is made perfect in weakness. Mm-hmm. And at that point, I knew that was God's gift to me of like, I want you to do this. And so I stepped into youth ministry in Elmira for 3 years. That's where I married my wife, who we've been married almost 25 years. I moved to Chambersburg for 6 years as a youth pastor in a catch-all position, you know, did everything and director of the Sunday school and all that, started a service there for young people. And so that was a cool experience. Now we have four kids, three of them are biological. And so they're all in college. My youngest biological just went to Houghton a couple weeks ago. And then the other two are at Karen and Roberts Wesleyan. And we adopted a young girl who we've had her from birth, adopted her when she was four. And so she's part of our family as well. And so that's kind of a few of the marketing points.
Wow. You have really told a wonderful story that I love the fact that it starts with Christian radio because that is something obviously near and dear to my heart. And we have some wonderful Christian radio stations throughout the Northeast here that are doing a great job. Also, the idea of camp, you know, we've got great camps. I think for parents, it's important for us to hear these milestones in your life and say, you know, how can we make these things happen for our kids as well? Because they are key things that can be life changers as they were for you. Now, you have moved from that into a full-time ministry with Higher Hope. Tell us about that.
So when I was in Chambersburg, PA, I developed such a deep community with some of the Sunday school class that we started. We had kids together, you know, at the same time. But while there, I felt like I was in the Bible Belt. I could walk maybe three blocks in any direction and get to a church of 1,500, 2,000, and vibrant ministry. People, churches that I would trust with my family. And I kept coming back to New York, our area, Horseheads, Elmira, Corning, and when I was a youth pastor, I had 40 kids who were coming to our youth ministry, all from the community, all from crazy backgrounds, crazy stories, but they came because they had no place else to be on a Wednesday night, and they felt like they were part of a family. And so when I left, the church was splitting, and the church really wasn't designed for those kids besides the youth ministry, and so I didn't want to send them into a mess. And so although I had some people coming after me who led well, my heart was still for those 40 kids and really starting a church that those 40 kids and others in our area could go to. And so we moved back and started developing a core group and moved back to really reach kids like that so that they could have a place to call home where they could develop their spiritual journey and adventure with. And it was a challenge. I mean, it still is a challenge, but God has done some incredible things. You know, I think of the 17 years of journeying, and it's been amazing to see what God has done in someone like me who doesn't have, there are church planters who are a lot smarter than I am, who have a lot more gifting than I have. But for some reason, God chose to pour his presence out in our church. And I can only point to him because a lot of things I tried shouldn't have worked. A lot of things we're doing now maybe shouldn't work, but God has been good. Yeah, we're still journeying the process of leading here at Higher Hope.
No, I feel the same way with Northeast Collaborative. I keep telling people all the time, you know, we just keep bringing our two fishes and five loaves to Jesus. And it's amazing what he can do with two fishes and five loaves. And I love, love, love not only your story of Higher Hope, but also, Mike, just your passion for the Northeast. Like, tell us more about that. Like, I'd love to hear even deeper into why you feel so called and passionate about this region of the country specifically.
So when I moved back, again, there's healthy churches in our area that I love, that I trust. And the pastors we partner with, and there's just not enough of them. I remember seeing pictures of the church I served with in the 70s, and the church was filled. Like, and the buildings around here are absolutely huge and beautiful and amazing, and yet they're empty, you know. And it's not because yes, our area generally is shrinking number-wise, but that's not the reason why the churches are empty. We have a huge mission field of people who need Christ. And I think in this season, it's not so much that this area is hard, as I think it is that this area is a great opportunity to see Christ do a move. I think people are hungry. I think coming out of COVID, we see a lot of people who are just hungry for relationship.
Yes.
I think they could experience Christian community, real Christian community, in a church, and be wowed by that Christian community, and then hopefully experience Christ along that journey. And so that's kind of what we built Higher Hope on, is obviously gospel-centered. We want people to experience Jesus and the rescue that he can do in their life. But also, we want our community, our relationships, to be a testimony to the people who come and say, that's not just something we attend, that's something we're part of. Like, yes, they love me no matter who I am. Whatever my background is, whatever, again, there's a book that came out, No Perfect People Allowed, and we kind of held on to that in the beginning. Like, we are a messy church in a lot of different ways, and we invite people into that mess because they're messy as well. And that's what God kind of built us on, is that kind of community and wanting people to come and be part of it.
So that book was very influential in our church planning journey at Restored. And the author, John Burke, I actually got to meet him and have dinner at his house in Austin. I remember thanking him because I said, John, that was the first book I'd ever read that actually it was his other book, Soul Revolution. Soul Revolution was the only book, same principles, that described discipleship through relationships. Like, I had never thought of discipleship through a grid of relationships. I had only been brought up with it as just information, not relationships. And that was just so transformational for us. And I'm so thankful that it was helpful for you guys at Higher Hope as well.
I think it's interesting, as you talked, Mike, about no lack of churches, or I should say no lack of edifices. My wife and I were just up in the Scranton area and marveling at the number of these massive and what were at the time probably very expensive edifices that are now empty. Mm. And part of the reason, I think, is what you were just talking about. It was a lack of relationship and understanding the relational aspect of Christianity. It was a part of tradition. It was a part of history, but it wasn't a part of relation. How can we make that more a part of what we do as the body of Christ?
I think when we still look at Jesus, he obviously was very relational in his ministry. He invited people into life. And so I think life on life is critical. And so for me as a pastor, you know, I try over the 17 years to be part of our community. I've coached so many little league and soccer teams along the way. Mm. And a lot of times they'll, you know how they ask you what you do. I try to hold back on the pastor thing as long as I can, just so, not because I'm ashamed of being a pastor, I just don't want to be a roadblock to any kind of relationship that I am developing with them. And I want them to come to know me naturally first, and then hopefully hear, oh, he's also a faith person and he's normal. You know, he's not a crazy pastor. Mm. And so, you know, what I've seen over 17 years is some of those people, and again, it's not like a one-time meeting and one-time coaching their kid. It takes a lot of engagement, a lot of relationship. But the fruit of that has been amazing to me, of people in our church who have been part of my son's baseball teams that have eventually come years after they played. They came in and they're like, wow, this mass is unbelievable, because some of them are Catholic background. And
right.
They're like, I don't understand a lot of it, what my church teaches, but I can grab onto what you're saying about Jesus. And I love that. And in fact, I'll just share this. My son and I, one of the things I want to do with my kids, all my kids, is take them on an overseas mission trip. I think it is a great way to disciple them and expand their view. And so with my son, his love is baseball. And so I wanted to do a baseball trip to the Dominican Republic, have him play and do some clinics with some of the locals there. And so we decided to invite his travel team and his high school team, anyone that wanted to come to be a part of it. Now, generally, mission trips are for Christian kids. We had about 3 or 4 Christian kids on this trip, and the rest are from a very diverse background. You know, and they knew that this was a Christian trip going in, that we'd be talking about Christ. But I also gave them the out that you don't have to agree with us, but I hope that you'll respectfully listen and be part of our conversations. Mm. And so we walked the week, and it was life-changing for them. And there's a lot of things that happen. On the last day, we have our fun day. And we were snorkeling. Yeah, I don't know if you do mission trips and do the fun thing. And while snorkeling, we were there, and a boat came in among people who are snorkeling. And at the end of it, someone lost their life. It was like a Jaws scene. All right, it was a mess. And our kids are like shaking, you know, and we're all counting our kids. And the lady lost her life in the midst of that. So we're in the midst of having these unchurched kids and us, and watching this person lose their life, and their team, their people with them. And after we got back, I'm like, listen, that was terrible. Let's talk about what you saw. And let's talk about really eternity. You know, what is it? Opened to such a deep, you know, it was a tragic event that somehow God used in our kid's life to point toward an eternity. Like, what's our hope? You know, mm-hmm. what do we hang on to in those moments when things are happening? And I just remember the tears from some of the kids and my son crying, because he's seeing the people he's prayed for, like, starting to turn a corner. And so it was just that relationship that they trust you with their kids and trust you with them. And hopefully over time that turns into some life change in them at some point.
That's incredible.
Wow.
That is just amazing that, first of all, that you would be willing to take a group like that, mm-hmm. a mixed group. I mean, that I've never heard of that before. But I can see a certain value in it because of the relationship and because of what you shared, and helping them to understand that the gospel is relational, I think that goes a long way towards doing that. Now, you have become a part of the Northeast Collaborative, NEC. What drew you to that and why?
So Pastor Jeremy, who was at His United Body, he was someone at the church in Elmira that I invested in at that point. And he went to Davis and, you know, started doing some youth ministry. And so when I planted, I'm like, hey, Jeremy, I'd love to have you on my team. You'd be a great asset. God didn't call him at that point. God called him later to our church family. He moved back to Elmira, became our youth pastor. And anyway, he knew Justin. And he knew that our heart was seeing God do a movement in the Northeast. Like we've talked networks for a while and partnering and trying to see that expansion of the kingdom here, seeing more churches started and walking along other churches as they plant and helping them, whether it's financially or with other resources and just doing something that God could spread through the Northeast. And so he's like, hey, have you heard of the NEC? I'm like, I haven't heard of the NEC. And so we got together, we drove up to Green, met with Justin, had an incredible conversation with him and got to hear a little bit about that. Met with Dan, but I think what really connected me, last spring, I was going through probably the hardest moment in ministry and life in a lot of different ways. My dad was on his deathbed. He was going through cancer and I was, every third night, I was staying up all night with him, you know, and he's struggling with a lot of different things. Coming out of COVID, sometimes in leadership, you have to make a leadership decision that costs you relationship with people. I had some of those things that, even inside of my family that come to my church, they didn't agree with the decision I made. And so there was a division there. Our daughter is adopted, but I don't want to get too far into her story. But in the midst of this, she's melting down every morning as we go to school, trying to open the door as we're driving down the road, trying to just that fight or flight in a heavy way. And so we're dropping her off to school, trying to do anything we can to get her in. It was an emotional draining time. And so there's a lot of different pieces where I was just hitting this wall of like, God, I don't know what's going on, but I don't know how much more I can handle or take. And so I was pulling in my dad's driveway and Dan called me on a whole different issue. He had no idea what was going on in his life. I don't even know if he remembers the phone call.
I do. But God, I do remember God this phone call
for him to call me. And he was sharing some news about NEC, some changes that they're probably going to make, was asking for something. And it really wasn't about that for me. It was about a pastor who I could share like, hey, I'm struggling just with this. My dad planted the church with me too. So it was a loss on multiple levels. So that phone call happened. And then he's like, you really need to talk to Jamie about some soul care. And, you know, we have this great person who cares for people. And so I called Jamie up and I'm not great at authenticity and sharing my like heartache, but Jamie made it very easy. And it was really one of the first times that I'm like, I can share my deep hurts. And Jamie kind of like, yeah, that he understood, like he spoke into that for me and like, yeah, that's trauma. That's hard, you know, and you don't have to walk that alone. And just a lot of other pieces that I just so appreciate. In the midst of that, I had an offer to go to Chicago to go to a conference. And so I asked Dan, I'm like, do you have anyone in the NEC who'd want to go with me? Justin went with me. And you just have those moments where God orchestrates the person you're with for a period of time, talking about family, talking about ministry, talking about life. And it was just what God had given me as a gift for that season. And then the marriage retreat last year, I walk in and don't know anybody besides a few conversations I had. And I felt like I was home. Like I felt like relationally, they may not know me yet, but I got to the first dinner table and there were three couples who were walking through adoption with us. And it was like a joint story. And so that kind of started the movement. And then I loved, obviously, the vision of a healthy church in every community and seeing churches multiply and just that movement. And so there's so many pieces that I connect with. And a lot of it was also a personal journey for me.
Mike, that's awesome, man. Thank you for stepping into a new partnership that I know can often be risky, but it's so cool to hear how God's worked it out. And it's awesome to have you not only a part of NEC personally, and as you're taking more leadership as our church strategist, I'm super excited about that, but also just what God's done for you in your church. Like as a church planter myself, I'd love to hear more, like how has God carried you and how has he been faithful to Higher Hope for these past 17 years?
before I celebrate the stories of God, I think you almost have to see the backdrop of the hard things of church planting. I remember the first couple of years, our worship team, I hope none of them hear this podcast. There were times I'd be like, can we just stop, please? Can we just stop singing? Because we need to end. And again, it wasn't because anybody's hard. It was just we didn't have the gifted worship leaders that we may have now. And there were other times I'd just stay up at night. You know, it felt like a Jenga game. If you play Jenga, it felt like a tower. And I felt like one more piece of wood that you pull out, everything's going to come collapsing down. I felt that pressure of like one more person who's upset and one more. And there's all this like financial pressure and location pressure and expectations of people. But so I just want to, God has done amazing things, but sometimes you get to a conference and you hear all the celebration stories. You're like, oh, God gave me a building. God did this. And sometimes we don't understand the whole story of like how long of a journey of waiting. And
100%.
That is such a good point, Mike, because we don't realize the investment of years for many of them before that comes to fruition. And we're like, why can't I see that happen? Why can't I see that happen? And we can, but it is a process.
Yeah. And I hope that people see that in their own story of like,
yeah,
God is moving. God's working.
Amen.
But it may not be our timing for things. And sometimes there are pivots that you're like, this is going to be hard. For a couple of years, Christmas Eve is a great celebration for the church. It's one of the high points of outreach, really. Like, it's a great place to invite friends. And so our location said, no, you can't use our place. And so we're like, what? Seriously? This is something that we have to figure out what to do. And so we start brainstorming. We didn't have a lot of things. We didn't have locations and all that, but we got to a point where like, what if we rented a barn and set up hay bales around a manger and kept it a very acoustic feel and just did our Christmas Eve in a barn? Now, we didn't do candles, which is a smart thing, by the way. But it's been one of the most powerful. Every year we've kept it, even though we have a facility now, and it is a community event. Like, there are people from our community who make it there every year and say, we love the simplicity of it. We love the way we just sit around, the Christmas carols. And it was out of the lack that we have this beautiful event that we do every year that becomes a community event. Another one of those points was we had some people who do like a chicken really well, like barbecue chicken really well, like with a fire department barbecue chicken. And they're like, we do this really well. So we're like, let's do a community chicken barbecue. We did it 1 year, gave out a couple hundred chicken dinners for free. And the first year, all the community's like, it was almost like they're looking for the strength. They're like, yeah, you're not serious. And so they drive by. I think we've been doing it for 12, 14 years now. And now people are asking on Facebook, they're like, when's your chicken barbecue? Is this our way of loving the community? It's something that we had someone who was good at it. And we use it to hopefully point people toward relationship with each other, that we are a church that loves our community, is not against it. We're not protesting things. We are trying to build relationship in and pour into them. A lot of the celebration points are like individual too. Like, there are just so many stories, 17 years of like people whose lives were changed in some way by Christ. You know, a Hindu who just came to church because their wife came to church, and year after year, a couple of years, they just came and they were very offstandish, and yet God does a work in their life. Mm-hmm. We have our children's ministry director who, before they came to our church, never attended a church, you know, and through discipleship, now they're discipling our young people.
Yes.
Our worship leader now is someone who was a teenager when we started the church, and through, again, discipleship and allowing them to do some things, now they're leading our worship and leading our youth ministry. You know, in the midst of the large scale story of the church, there are so many like little stories, and I don't say little because they're not little, but amazing individual stories of God's goodness and life-changing power all along the way. Mm.
Well, what you're describing there, Mike, is the loss to leading process. Seeing people go not just from lost to not lost, but lost to leading and being those reproducing reproducers. But that process is messy, and so many people lose sight of just how messy it is. I was just talking with someone about this famous golf shot. And, you know, I have to bring golf into this because, you know, it's just it just has to. Even though I got my butt kicked so badly at our Pastors and Wives retreat. That was terrible.
I mean, that was miniature golf, Dan. But
it was mini golf, but still. Listen, Tiger Woods, his greatest shot ever. No one ever talks about the fact that the only reason he made that shot that everyone talks about and everyone watches the replay of was because he totally duffed the shot before. The shot before, he totally duffed. He totally, you know, it was an awful shot, but it set up the greatest shot ever. And that, even with Northeast Collaborative, I mean, we launched 2019, late October 2019, and then bang, COVID hit, right? And we even thought that we were going to have some financial influx that didn't come in. And then COVID hit and it was like, okay, God, I'm not sure what you're going to do with this, but here you go. It's yours. And honestly, I don't know if it wasn't for COVID, if we like, we might have been a completely different thing, but now we are this very relational, like the culture of what God has done in Northeast Collaborative, I don't think would have happened if it wasn't for these hard circumstances. But yet, moving forward, there's things that we want to grow and things we want to improve. And Mike, you know, is that, I'd love to hear you share some of your thoughts because we've talked offline about that. But what are some ways that you'd like NEC to keep growing and keep moving into the future with some vision?
Yeah, when I look at the NEC, I see so many foundational parts that are beautiful. I think about the relationships, again, the marriage retreat, just seeing the conversations and the depth of relationship that's developing. I listen to some of the stories of the leaders that we have in the NEC of what God's doing in them and through them. And I'm wowed by their story and what God's doing. There's just so many incredible pieces to what God has put together for the NEC. And I don't necessarily see it being a new thing. I see it like it being a merry-go-round. And we go camping every year and there's a merry-go-round there and it's a mess, you know, it's dangerous. But the merry-go-round, the idea of a merry-go-round is that it's hard, it's slow going in the beginning, and then it just speeds up and it takes less work to spin it. It only takes two fingers for a while and it gets going faster and faster. And that's kind of how I see like the NEC. There's so many great things going on. And I think God can do so much more in the Northeast. The mission field is so huge and there's so much potential and possibility here that it's seeing the movement of God do more. More leaders who are sent out to plant churches, more leaders who are not walking alone, but walking in vibrancy with other relationships, but also in their ministry at their church. And I think the NEC is doing so many incredible things. And I'm excited about what God can do. I'm hoping it's just a seed right now, and God grows it into a place that plants many other seeds and apple trees and orchards, and see the movement of God released in our region, and not through one person, but through a collaboration of multiple leaders, all with different gifts, all with different abilities. But when you put those pieces together, I think God can do some incredible things.
It is a beautiful thing. Henry Blackaby said in his Experiencing God series, see where God is moving and join in. And I kind of feel like that's what your desire is along with NEC, Mike. You've seen how it has impacted people's lives, impacted your own life at the leadership retreat. And I think that as we look at the need in the Northeast, it is great. How can you encourage pastors and leaders in the Northeast right now?
Well, first, I would say for years, I think I walked alone. There's just something different about being a pastor, a leader, that your whole life is wrapped up in the church. Your friendships are in the church. Your kids are in the church. And all your life is in the church. And there can be sometimes in the midst of that isolation and aloneness. And I would first suggest that that's not how we're designed, that we need other pastors, maybe a soul care coach. We need to care for our own soul first. And if we care for our own soul, I think that will flow into our ministries and our churches. And so I would first suggest that there are lots of tools that NEC has, lots of resources, people, even other pastors you can lean into, that I think for me, it would have been, I wish I would have done it sooner, is kind of like have a group that I could have maybe gone deeper with and share a little bit more on that. On the other side is I think we want, I'd love just to see us raise up leaders who will raise up leaders who will raise up. I think that's how movements started, especially here in the Northeast. although God can call people to New York, New Jersey, and PA. And that's a special thing. I think the way God will do most of the work here is by churches raising up church planters and raising up revitalization pastors and raising up business people and teachers and all sorts of leaders in our community to see the move of God work. So I would just say, yes, we want to reach the lost, and I'd go all in on that. But in the meantime, as we're reaching the lost, let us also develop leaders who will reach the lost to see the kingdom expand. So that's what I would suggest us as we move forward as the NEC and as leaders.
There are so many resources that people may not be aware of. If you're listening to this podcast for the first time, there's a whole history of podcasts that you can go back and listen to that are just fantastic. We all just came off of the leadership retreat time where we got a chance to spend time with each other. We have NLS 23 coming up in just a short period of time. So many opportunities and resources that are available. You mentioned Soul Care, Jamie Overholser, and the work that he does with NEC. These are things that we can take advantage of to grow the kingdom. And then, as you said, Mike, to reach out to others who can then continue to grow the kingdom. I'm glad you're jumping in when you are and in the way that you are.
And Mike, I remember you telling me one time, you're like, I feel like what's going on with NEC is so much more about the people and not the program.
Right.
And we can strengthen the program to dovetail with the amazing people that are a part of it, oh my gosh, the sky's the limit. And that's part of why I'm so excited that you're jumping in even more, helping us with all kinds of things coming up this fall and then hopefully even more in 2024. So, man, we're just excited. How can we pray for you and your family as you venture out into more regional collaborative work here?
Yeah, as a ministry or church, we are in a season of, again, coming out of COVID, we wanted to kind of reset our vision and kind of define where our target is. And so we're walking this next season, October, November, to kind of cast that vision and hopefully get people really excited about where we're going as a church. And so, you know, a new church plant or campus residency programs and that sort of thing. So we can be praying for that. As a family, one of the things I'm excited about is my kids. You know, I think our greatest ministry is our families. And my three oldest kids are in college and they're just walking with Christ. And the one just got engaged to an incredible girl who's a Christian girl. And we're excited about that. And my daughter just came back from camp, so excited to invest her life in young girls, discipling and pouring into them. My son's learning how to do worship leading. And so I would love to see God do more in their life, but I'm excited about what God's doing. I always want to be like kind of the floor of their life and not the ceiling, as in I want them to stand on my shoulders and do more than I could do. And so I'm praying that for the three and for our adopted daughter. She has so much potential in that journey as well. And she has a heart for people and loves people, but I'll be praying for her healing.
Yeah.
Again, we'll talk about it maybe sometime in an adoption podcast, but you know, we love these kids and there's so much healing that they need from Christ in that journey. And so I'll be praying over that for her.
Yeah, we will certainly be doing that. You know, relationships, the key to what we do here. Although we do also provide resources, we want to connect you with the resources and the people that will help you and your ministry as we help you lead and launch healthy churches here in the Northeast. As always, all those resources are mentioned in today's show notes. And if you heard something in today's podcast that was encouraging to you, make sure you share Dense in the Darkness with someone else who might be helped by what we do.